This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to Roundtable Talks on RNIB Connect Radio. Education is a human right for children and young people, and choosing where you or your child study can be a big decision. Some blind and partially sighted people choose to study in mainstream schools, where they may be the only student with sight loss. This can mean studying closer to where you live and staying with existing friends, but can make it harder to receive your study materials and teaching in an accessible way. Other students may study in specialist schools, where most or all of their peers have sight loss. These have tailored teaching and better access to resources, but can sometimes lead to a lack of integration and make transitioning into mainstream institutions difficult. Wherever they are, children and young people with special educational needs have a right to receive special educational provision, and students should have access to specialised staff, such as qualified teachers of the visually impaired, known as QTVIs, and registered qualified habilitation specialists. We're joined today by four blind and partially sighted panellists to share and compare their educational experiences. Our first panellist is Halima Farouk. Halima is a visually impaired, aspiring criminal barrister, disability activist, and podcast co-founder. She's registered severely sight impaired, and most of her remaining sight is only in her left eye. She studied in mainstream schools and then went to Brunel University for her law degree, followed by the University of Law for her bar course. She's currently working as a casework officer for the Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner. Hi Halima, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Our second panellist is Kerry Campbell. Kerry is totally blind and was educated in mainstream schools from nursery right through to the end of high school. As far as she knows, she was the first blind student in Scotland to study fully in mainstream education. She studied psychology at university, followed by a master's in educational psychology, and she's now a practicing educational psychologist and is married with two children. In her spare time, she enjoys yoga, staying active, and singing in a choir. Hi, Kerry. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi there, thank you very much for inviting me.
Our third panellist is Sami El-Sanhouri, who's in his early 20s and in full-time education at the Royal National College for the Blind. He's studied both in mainstream and specialist educational settings and applied to study at a university who said they could not meet his needs, so he returned to college. Hi Sami, thanks so much for joining us.
Hiya, thanks for having me and a pleasure to be here.
Our fourth panellist is Hubert Pavalkovich, a familiar voice from the Lunch Break and Tech Talk here at RNIB Connect Radio. He studied mostly in mainstream education, but finished in a specialist setting which allowed him to pursue the qualifications he wanted. Hi Hubert, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's get started. I'll come to you with the first question, Sami. What was your favourite subject when you were in primary school and why?
As tempting as it was to say lunch, because I like my food, was actually history. I really enjoyed learning about the past, and I've always been a firm believer that, you know, you need to learn about the things that came before in order to form the things that come after.
History was one of these subjects I was actually quite good at, but yet myself, I couldn't get into, which my history teacher found quite amusing. I think for me, primary school always spoke art. I loved art, especially if it involved making things out of like your kind of Play-Doh style, attempting to paint, preferably on paper rather than myself, but both sometimes were applicable if needed. So for me, it was always art.
How about you, Kerry?
Oh, my favourite was probably, I was a bit annoying in primary, I kind of loved it all. I was one of those kids, but I did love probably story writing, and I loved being in the gym, climbing up to the top of the wall bars and probably giving people a heart attack, that kind of thing.
Excuse the pun, but primary school for me was quite a blur. I don't quite remember enjoying subjects. It was quite a struggle. All I remember from primary school was being the only one that can't see. I couldn't really get on board with teachers when they were pointing at the various displays that you have around the classroom. It was a very much struggle. So yeah, no favourite subjects from me, sorry.
Did that change when you went to secondary school? Were you taught in a different way, or was that a challenge throughout your whole kind of educational career?
I think the start of secondary school was slightly difficult, but there was a lot more introductions that were made when I was in year seven. So I remember being assigned a teaching assistant and I felt a lot more in control. Maybe that was due to my age. So I was, you know, at the age where I wanted to know more about my site and I wanted to be a lot more in control of my education and what is going on. I don't think I still know what's going on. I'm just living every day as it comes. But primary school was just difficult because I guess I was so young and I was always the one sort of singled out. And as like, you just feel like you stick out like a sore thumb. Whereas when I went into secondary school, you know, certain teachers introduced themselves to me saying, we're going to assist you in these aspects. So I felt a lot more confident and in control.
I was just thinking it's probably slightly the other way round for me, although I do feel lucky. I think overall, looking back, I had a pretty positive experience all the way through. But probably in primary, I just was having a great time, quite oblivious to the fact that I was different from other people because I'd known these friends all the way through from the age of five. And I was just me and I would just kind of grab their arm and run around the playground, just do what everybody else was doing. And then it's just obviously when you hit those teenage years, I do remember suddenly thinking, oh, people are being weird around me, what's going on, and having to make that shift to feeling a bit self-conscious and a bit different. And I was lucky to have a lovely group of friends who I'm still in touch with today. But yeah, that realization and that kind of feeling of standing out and having to be the one that uses a brailler and carries massive equipment around the place, etc., etc., didn't really hit me until secondary. So that's probably when I was more self-conscious, much more so than primary.
The funny thing with my primary school experience is it involved many layers because not only I was visually impaired in mainstream schools, my primary school experience was crossed over with moving on to from one country's educational system to another. I started with 4 years of mainstream education in primary school in Poland to moving to the UK to a system which was very different. And I went from an equivalent of year four in Poland to then moving to year seven in middle school in sunny Bedfordshire with my education. So it was changing education systems, changing languages in which education was delivered. The only thing that actually stayed consistent was the fact that I was still visually impaired out of all things.
I knew you were going to say that.
So I actually had a similar experience to Hubert in that I moved from North Sudan when I was about seven and a half. So I moved all of a sudden from like speaking Arabic, learning a new language all at the same time as doing education in the UK and moving to London. And so due to doing a mainstream in Sudan, I very much had that experience of not being the odd one out because I was just doing what the other children were doing. Okay, definitely had a few more bumps and bruises from running into poles because sighted guide apparently was a concept I didn't like to do. But I just felt like a normal child until about secondary school when I realised, oh, wait, I was the only blind person there and the school's first blind person, as it were. So then it hit me. I was like, wait. In a sense, like, I'm not normal, but also, like, I'm normal to me, but to everyone else, I'm whoever they're going to think I am at this point.
Often in schools, you're kind of, and it's not fair, but I've had this many times, especially when I moved into kind of the GCSE years, where I was kind of, it's the blind guy, it's the blind kid. And It's kind of like you almost didn't have an identity with certain students. And part of it was a bit upsetting. And the other part was like, well, what a surprise.
I just kind of learned to own it after a while. I actually used to make jokes like, well, if the school ever ended up on TV, I'd be good press at least, because I'd be some sort of success story one day for them if they got me through education, which, yeah, to their credit, they did. But we'll get to that later.
You have to see the funny side of it sometimes because it's hard enough as it is. And if you can't laugh about it, then you're going to cry pretty much, I think.
Yeah, and they do say laughter's the best medicine, so definitely lived by that.
Absolutely. I've actually decorated my white cane. It's got like rhinestone gems all the way around it, and my stance is that people are going to look at me anyway. I might as well give them something to look at.
It's funny you mentioned the cane. I used to really hate using my cane in school, especially in my early days when they actually gave me a cane when I moved into the UK, and I was like, I don't want to use this. I don't need this. I can walk perfectly fine. And it's only when my sight started getting worse and I fell into a snowy ditch and I kind of thought, ah, that thing might, that white stick might actually come useful.
Useful, yeah. See, I didn't used to use my cane in school, and I kind of wish I did, looking back. I only started using it when I sort of got into the world of work, because I had to travel in London every day, and I was like, right, we're going to start using our cane so people stay well away. And then people started jumping over my cane and using it as an obstacle course.
Sammy, how did it feel after having that mainstream experience where you felt like the odd one out to then go to a specialist educational kind of institution?
This is just my personal opinion, but I think for me, I felt really weird, just because, like, I always had some sort of connection within the VI community, because I do on and off activities with charities like Victor and the RNIB and places like that. But, you know, going back into specialist education full time did feel really strange. I think post mainstream, you kind of get hit with the feeling like you're in a bubble a bit, just because with mainstream, yes, you're like, school is a bubble, but with 900 odd, 1,000 odd kids, you know, it's not a complete bubble. And then also you've got that separation of, like, you know, your home sort of family and friends and your school friends and whatever feels a bit like a bubble. But at the same time, it felt satisfying in a way, just because it was like, I don't have to explain everything anymore. Like, I can say one thing and teachers or other, like, VI people that I talk to will get it.
I think that's the big difference when it comes to specialist education, where when you come in, you're kind of used to a mainstream education environment where you're constantly on edge. It's like, how will students react to this? How will teachers react to this? What they will say to this? And you go in there and it's like, everyone else is in a similar predicament. You don't feel out of place in a sense, because everyone else knows or has been through something similar to what you have been through. And at the same time, sight loss is different for everyone. So although you've all been through a similar experience, everyone's dealt with it differently. So you all understand each other at a certain level, even though, you know, it is such a different change of environments, really. There's a massive contrast between mainstream and specialist. And whether it's a good or a bad thing is something that everyone has to decide for themselves, really, because it's such an individual approach when it comes to the difference between the two educational environments.
Yeah, and I think that is what you miss out on, isn't it, in mainstream. I didn't really know I was missing out on anything. I was more than happy with my sighted friends. But then when I was 15, I went for some work experience to the Royal Blind School in Edinburgh, because at that time I thought I wanted to be a teacher. And I got to board with the other kids that were my age for the week, and I had a ball, you know, just meeting other people. We could have a laugh about the same things. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to feel mortified about this, because it's not just me, and we can make a joke of it now. It's not embarrassing, it's hilarious. And just, it totally shifted my attitude. And then after that, I made sure that I went on like RNIB activity holidays and stuff, maybe once a year, just to make that connection. And just the best of both worlds, I think, is the ideal for me.
I'm just thinking, I feel like I missed out, because secondary school for me was, whilst I loved the result and, you know, everything it taught me, the journey was very difficult. I was bullied because people used to think that I was faking being blind. It was a very difficult time, especially when you are 16 and you are, you know, dealing with loads of other things that are going on in your life. And then on top of that, you got your peers that are saying that, oh, the teacher that actually helps her is whispering answers into her ears. So I think I really missed out. But at the same time, you know, the struggle was slightly worth it, because I then became a role model for other VI students that were brought into the school, and they would sort of come to me and ask me, we're struggling with this or we're struggling with that. So I guess there was beauty at the end of it. But I do think that the one benefit about going to a specialist school is you do have the community. And I, in sixth form, when I was applying for university, one of the blind colleges did like a sixth form away weekend, and I heard about it and I went there, and I absolutely loved my time there, because I was like, wow, these people get me, these people, we have the same struggles. And that was the first time that I had exposure to people my age that were also visually impaired. And I didn't have that in school, but then I ended up being the go-to person at school for other students that came in. So I guess it was a nice thing overall, but I feel as though I missed out a little bit.
And having that worry and that fear kind of every day when you went to school, how do you think that impacted your relationship with learning and education?
I'm very much the kind of person that just gets on with things, and I knew that my sight is what it is and that it's not going to change, and there's nothing that anyone says or does that's going to change my eyesight. So in a way, I had to put my fears aside, because if I just sat there and cried about why am I blind or all that sort of stuff, then I wouldn't achieve anything. So very early on, I had to sort of flip my mindset, and I think that's what sort of carried me through.
There's loads of research coming out at the moment about having a sense of belonging and connectedness and attachments and relationships, and they're all so key to feeling that you're part of a community, and that really applies to school fundamentally. So I think if you don't have that, it can totally change your relationship with education. And I work with young people now who are obviously going through that. Only a tiny part of my work now is with visually impaired kids, but it applies across the board to kids with any additional support needs, really. So yeah, I think it's huge, that kind of feeling of belonging or not.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wasn't the most connected with my peers. We'd have sort of like, there's moments that I can look back on where I'm like, yes, we all sort of came together under that one specific sort of moment or that one specific thing, but certainly I wouldn't say I had a like biggest connection with my like mainstream peers in particular, apart from the school choir. That was the one time where truly I sort of felt in with the rest of the group, but outside of that, it really was very much Sammy the blind kid plus everyone else kind of thing. I just think not having that connection or sense of belonging did turn me into a bit of a reluctant learner.
Let's talk about teachers now. What was one standout method or action that a teacher took to help support you with your learning?
In mainstream, when I was doing IT skills, and although I was quite IT literate at the time, I was still looking to learn a lot more. What my IT teacher at the time did was they made me learn, I think it was Microsoft Word. And on its own, it can be a bit dry remembering all the keyboard shortcuts and what they do and then editing a document. And, you know, it might not be the most interesting document. So what my teacher did is she tailored the Word document I was using as a kind of practice document to practice all the things I learned. She basically copied the Wikipedia page for the football team I support. They tailored the more dry subject around my interests to make it easier and more fun to learn, which I think was fantastic because it's not something major, but it added that extra layer.
I think it's teacher attitudes in general. So if you have a teacher or a set of teachers that think you can do things and have high expectations of you as a blind student, then I think that makes all the difference. And I think that's very easy to pick up on, even when you're a young teenager. And some of the things that I used to really love was just, I suppose, when teachers would think outside the box. So they didn't just think, well, it's up to someone else to adapt this for you. They would think, okay, how are we going to teach this to Kerry? And my technical teacher in high school was really good. He would come up with random gadgets and say, right, I've made this for you. I think this is going to help you measure angles in maths. And he would hand me this amazing simple gadget that would help me measure angles in maths. And then I just used to get really excited by if they were simple enough and I could understand them, tactile diagrams. So if everyone else was colouring in something. I remember having a goddess, that's so random, but we were doing RE and I had a big tactile goddess that I could colour in with everybody else. Why I wanted to colour in, I've no idea, I couldn't see the colours, but hey, everyone else was doing it and I could colour in the lines. So just things like that, when they thought about it and came prepared, I think that means a lot. They should do that anyway, I shouldn't even have to say it, but I guess it doesn't happen all the time.
I have a really, really nice answer for this. When I started secondary school, I was allocated a teacher and her name's Vanessa Crouch. I'm going to give her the biggest shout out ever because I owe a lot to her. I'm still friends with her till this day and I left school a very long time ago. But essentially, she became my teaching assistant for all things adaptations. If there was ever a assessment that needed altering, she would be there before school, after school, giving it her own time during her lunch. If there was a PowerPoint that had really, really bad contrasting colours on them, she would go in and change that all so that I was able to look at it. And then she just became my spokesperson at school. And she knew me so well that all the teachers would go to her before presenting me with a document because they were so scared. her sort of can-do attitude and making sure that I was given every opportunity that anyone else had. She was doing her counselling degree at the time as well. So, you know, there was a lot of times that she would hear my experiences of things that were going on in school and how certain teachers were not treating me well or how certain students weren't treating me well. So she really got to know me, I think, better than anyone else. And I think it's really, really important when teachers sort of see the person and see the potential instead of just writing them off saying, oh, I'm going to have to put in a lot of work. Whereas Vanessa put in so much work, but I think it was worth it because she taught me a lot of things. One of the things that she taught me quite early on was if you don't ask, you don't get. And the worst that someone can say is no. And so that made me confident in asking questions and knowing that if someone does say no, that it's not the end of the world. I think it was very beneficial to have that influence at that age because it really has shaped me going forward. And when I then eventually did go to university, I had everything that she's taught me at school. And I was able to sort of, you know, fight my own battles and learn things and adapt things accordingly. So I think teachers have a huge, huge role in shaping our education.
I had a TA, Jenny Sims. She was brilliant. She was one of those drill sergeant types. In the moment, I didn't click with her, but in hindsight, she was my biggest supporter. She would really fight for me and fight to support me, even when I'd kind of given up. And I feel like if I didn't have the teachers that believed in me and that knew I can do things with the right adaptations, the teachers that I felt didn't believe in me would have definitely gotten to my head. And I feel like I could have reached a point where I could have given up on myself. But thanks to those teachers and TAs that had faith in me, I, you know, got through and we're here now.
I had a teacher like that who believed in my independence, which at the time I didn't, which funny enough, I'm quite a fiercely independent person now, but back when I was 14, I wasn't. And it reminds me of a trip to Spain where she said, no, you're going to walk with your cane unguided alongside me. And I refused point blank, but she kind of made me do it. Something for which now I'm grateful for because it made me want to be independent because I was forced to be independent in the first place, which encouraged me to then do it myself.
What is one major change you would like to be in place for blind and partially sighted students in the future? I'll come to you first, Halima.
So I know that recently the government has said that sign language would be taken, can be an option for GCSEs. So I think something similar to benefit blind and partially sighted students or to raise awareness for VI students would be quite beneficial. I remember when I was in school, the only awareness my class and I guess the wider school had was because of me and because of the things that they would hear about me. Maybe schools should have more of a forward-thinking approach to raising awareness themselves. I'll give you another example. My baby sister was learning about disabilities in her primary school a few years ago. So once she told me, I wrote a letter to her school and I sent it with her and I said, hi, I'm so-and-so's sister. I'm visually impaired. I was called to the bar. If you want a real-life example of what blindness looks like, then please call me and I'll be happy to come and speak to your school and show them what it actually looks like. And they took me up on the offer. I gave a talk to the entire year group because I wanted them to see what blindness looks like. Like, you know, I am a fashionista because I love bright colours. So I don't want them to think that, oh, it's, you know, someone in a white cane and shades. I did have shades, but they were propped on top of my head, you know. So I think examples like that, where we try and raise awareness in school so that people know what's going on when they leave school and they can assist. I know that people that have met me and have worked with me are a lot more aware after having met me. It's just sad to think that I was the example that made them think like that, and it's they didn't have that knowledge beforehand.
On top of Halima's suggestion about awareness, I'd love to see a particular emphasis on the fact that being VI is a spectrum. People have heard of, you know, VI people like Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder. I think I'd love to see particular emphasis on just like autism's a spectrum, or other, you know, other disabilities can affect people in different levels. I'd love to see that being emphasised in the wider world for visual impairment.
I think for me, one of the big changes, I appreciate how difficult it is to get funding from your local authority for specialist education, which is something that the special education sector has always struggled with. In order to learn so much as independence and independent living, never mind actual other academic qualifications. So what I'd like to see is mainstream schools being able to accommodate things such as learning living skills, because I found, for example, my mainstream school, sure, I could get someone to come out and do mobility, but there was no space where I could learn independent living in the mainstream environment. And for me, I think it would be good to have that option so that people don't feel they have to go to specialist education to get the same sort of provisions, that if people want to stay in mainstream because they actually feel comfortable in that environment, they can still get the opportunity to learn, you know, the same level of living skills that you can get if you choose to go to specialist education. I think it's all about having the choice.
Can I have two? The first one, I'm going to completely echo what Hubert said. I think that if we're going to have mainstream as our model, which I know we largely do these days, then we need to look at this curriculum for independent living skills and mobility, habilitation, all that area. I think it needs to be embedded from the early stages, and it needs to be progressive as you go through school. I'm speaking for Scotland. I don't actually know the situation in England, but listening to what you guys have said, I feel like we're not there yet. It's quite piecemeal. You get little blocks of input and then nothing. And I think that's doing our visually impaired kids a disservice when you compare what they may have got in a specialist school. And my second one is just a comment around, I suppose what we've talked about all through is we haven't quite got it right for social inclusion and belongingness yet. You know, we might have physical inclusion and academic inclusion, but I don't know if we're there with people really feeling that they're part of their community. And I wonder if part of that is that I'm probably the oldest here. I definitely am the oldest here, I feel. And I was at primary school in the 80s, and it was much less risk averse then. I wasn't so much accompanied by adults all the time as I see visually impaired kids are these days. I think I can sometimes see quite adult-reliant children who are not having that opportunity to develop socially with their peers. And I know we can't really go back to the kind of 80s sink or swim, and we probably shouldn't either, but I think we need to find some kind of balance in between that allows sort of less. We do need teaching assistants, and they have a really important role, but could we be focusing on them also knowing when to stand back? And I'm not saying that doesn't happen in some establishments. I'm sure it does, but I just don't know if we're quite there with that right balance. So I'd say that's my two things. It's the independent living, and it's the really we need to have a good hard look at how we help people socially and to feel that they're really part of things and really having a meaningful experience in their mainstream schools.
Yeah, and if I could just add to that, I think independent living should be taught at mainstream school. I was a student ambassador when I went to university, and I would see students that would come in that were struggling, that didn't have sight loss issues, who, you know, didn't know how to cook or didn't really know how to do laundry or other sort of independent living skills. You know, why is this considered at specialist schools? Because it's because visually impaired students should know how to do it, whereas when you're in mainstream schools, it's not considered at all. So yeah, I think there's definitely something there to look into, and if that's sort of one thing that we take away, that's how we could do like a hybrid of the two mainstream and specialist school systems.
Well, thank you so much everyone for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio for our education roundtable.